sign is like a tree. Long time ago, just a dry seedling, nothing, useless. Oppressed deep in the ground, covered with the dirt of bare farmlands surrounding. Years and years have gone by. Pop, a sprout, two sprouts, three, four, a tree. Branches here and there, unusual, lovely, natural, creative, expressive. Buildings and people surround the tree, other trees on its side. In its rows, in proper sentence, neatly trimmed. Wait a minute. I made a mistake. Oh, yeah. Trees in proper sentence, neatly trimmed and boring. But people say sentential trees, perfect, wonderful. People say tree isn't perfect, doesn't fit the town and people. Tree is not a good, true tree. People say it's a good idea to put chimps in a tree to swing and play on it. People say it's a good idea to put the tree in the forest with so many trees so people can't see it. But I don't agree. Better the little girl and the tree blended. Strong, proud, tall, spreading out its arms for all to see, to sign. Do you have a? I'm open for any questions. Do you have any? Deaf people, sign language, poetry, anything?
How long did you study sign? Is the question.
My parents are deaf, so I grew up with signing, but studying sign language as a language only in the last few years, maybe 5 or 6 years, studying it as a language.
You.
Is it possible to get copies of your poetry? It'd be nice if I published them. I haven't published them. Maybe someday you'll see a book. I can't see her. Oh.
When you write a poem, like about the first sign language or the first words, what do you do?
When I was a little kid, little girl, someone told me I had to write in English, English poems. I didn't know that sign language could become poetry. And later, as I studied sign language as a language, I realized that you could invent in sign language. So I started moving over and thinking in signs and trying to write down. So I do half and half. I write some of the poems in English and first, and some I write in sign language first and then put the English down. Any other questions? Do you find translating Robert Frost poems easy? I enjoy Robert Frost poetry, but translating is not exactly easy. One has different interpretations of poems. I interpret it one way. I feel comfortable with that. And also I focus on the signs meshing with the poetry, the proper hand shapes, the movement, to make it look good.
If you happen to publish your poems, how would you know how to sign them or read them?
I haven't published them yet, so I don't know how. One way would be videotaping. Couldn't do it in a book. Or a book with words, but with some drawings, illustrations, to show what I want the sign to be. Special signs in the poems, not all the signs. And then leave people who want to sign it, leave it to their imagination to try to make it look good. That's one way. I don't know now. Well, I'm not hearing people. You should ask other people.
Are we making progress?
Maybe giving an idea. Good. Maybe I can give some idea today, but not complete understanding. You have to enter the culture completely, just as you would with other languages, poets, Indian people, Mexican, Spanish, French, whatever. You have to know the culture to appreciate the poetry more. You can appreciate things without knowing it, but knowledge gives more appreciation. Jabberwocky one more time? Do you want it one more time? Okay. "'Twas brillig, and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogoves, and the mown raths outgrabe. Beware the Jabberwock, my son, the jaws that bite, the claws that catch. Beware the Jubjub bird, and shun the frumentous Bandersnatch. He took his vorpal sword in hand. Long time the manxome foe he sought. So rested he by the tum-tum tree and stood a while in thought. And as in uffish thought he stood, the Jabberwock with eyes of flame came whiffling through the tulgey wood and burbled as it came. One, two, one, two, and through the vorpal blade went snickersnack. He left it dead, and with its head he went galumphing back. And hast thou slain the Jabberwock? Come to my arms, my beamish boy. O frabjous day, Calloo Calay. He chortled in his joy. 'Twas brillig, and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogroves, and the mome raths outgrabe. One question: how did you develop your love for drama? My love for drama. How did I develop that? Okay. When NTD, National Theater of the Deaf, was established, many people who were involved in that were from my home area: Charles Corey, Eric Maltzkun, Audrey Norton, Bernard Bragg, Joe Velez, 6-7 people. California. I lived in California. All went there. So, of course, they were all my parents' friends, my parents being deaf. They came home during their vacations, and we would sit and watch them tell their stories about their theater experiences. I wanted that. I would copy everything they did and come home. My brother and I would try to act everything we saw. And then it just continued. I enjoying theater. I had good models. And
let us thank Ella Lentz very, very much. I think we have to.
He asked me, is my brother in drama? I said, no, my brother loves sports.
I'm sorry that we have to end now because we have another program starting shortly. Please thank Ella Lentz. In our other tent right now, we'll be having a demonstration of the TTY. A teletype machine used by the deaf to communicate over the telephone. Our next program in this tent will be at 4 o'clock. We'll be having a narrative session in which several of our participants will share some stories on the subject of deafness in the family. So that'll be beginning at 4 o'clock. We're selling books about deaf culture, deaf poetry, the history of the deaf in America, in the craft sales tent, just on the other side of the big truck you see in the middle of the area, so you can feel free to help yourself over there to more information. Thank you all very much. I'd like to welcome all of you to our next workshop and wake up our interpreter. Sorry. You're here in the deaf folklore area of the 15th Annual Folklife Festival, and our next workshop is going to be a storytelling panel on a very special topic, that is, deafness in the family. Our panelists come from very, very different families with different numbers of deaf and hearing in different generations, and they have a lot of stories to tell. I'm going to ask them to share their stories with each other and with you about what it was like growing up deaf in a deaf family, what it was like growing up hearing in a hearing family, in a deaf family, excuse me, what it was like growing up in a mixture of situations in general. As you may know, if you've been at the Folklife Festival in past years, we have had for many years a section of the festival that dealt with family folklore. Now, the family is the first real group in which we develop our personal traditions. And there are favorite family stories about practical jokes, about the history of the kids in the family, about ancestors, and so on. Everyone in the family has his favorite experience to tell about, and so on. And the festival's for a long time been interested in that, but we've never before had the chance to discuss deaf family folklore and the traditions in families where we've found deafness. So our panelists are going to share that a little bit with you today. I'm going to start it off by asking each of them to tell you very briefly his or her name, and then who in the family is deaf, who in the family is hearing, just so that you get an idea of the range we have here, the range of experience. And then we'll start talking about some other kinds of experiences. May I begin with you, Barbara? Your name and your family?
Hi. My name is Barbara Canapel. I was born deaf, in a deaf family. My mother, my father, my uncle, my aunt, another aunt are all deaf. My oldest sister is hearing, and she was the only hearing member of the whole family. Hi, my name is Debbie Sunnestrahl, and I am a freak because I didn't come from a deaf family. I was born deaf, yes, but all members of my family are hearing people. There's no deafness in my family except me. My name is Stephanie Aiello. I'm born in a deaf family. Father and mother is deaf. Here's my mother. I have one hearing sister. She's the only one in the family who can hear.
My name is Sheila Grinnell. I was born hearing and I'm still hearing. And I have deaf parents and two older brothers. Two older brothers, and there's the three kids we're all hearing.
My name is Elaine Aiello. What'd you say? Third generation of a deaf family. My husband is deaf, and as well as myself, as well as my daughter. My name is Lily Burke. I come from a deaf family. My mother and father are deaf. My grandmother's hearing, but I do have a deaf uncle. My brother and sister are deaf. My children, two deaf and two can hear.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We haven't got our act together, but it's a good act. As these people introduced themselves, you might have gotten a rather unusual and inaccurate picture of the deaf community. As a matter of fact, we do have an unusual percentage of people here from families that have been deaf over one or two or three generations. I think that I'm right to say that more than 90% of deaf children are born to hearing parents. Is that right? So,
yes,
while
yes.
In one way we're not a representative group here, in many other ways we actually are. Well, perhaps I could throw out a question for you to start with, and since we have so many panelists, I'll ask them to take turns and to make brief comments or tell short stories if they can. They're good talkers. Throw out the question, what about your parents' attitudes when you were born? If you were born deaf to hearing parents, what was their attitude? If you were born hearing to deaf parents, what's the attitude there? And how about the families where both parents and children were deaf? You want to share experiences about that?
I'll volunteer, Lily says. When I was born, my mother was very accepting of my deafness, but my mother explained to me after I'd grown up that my father, who's deaf also, a lot of pride, and he would try making different noises and so forth, see if I could hear, and was very disappointed that I was deaf. And he did leave home. That's what my mother tells me. But growing up, I never felt affected as a deaf person growing up until after I was grown, and then I have some sensitivities there.
Thank you. What about our mother-daughter? What about our mother-daughter set here? What has deafness been like in your family? I know that you have a hearing sister, Steffi, so that's a rather mixed family.
You start, Mom. Okay, I'll start. When I started having deaf children, it didn't really worry me. I just was glad that to have a child. Really, I wanted to know if the child was deaf or not, so I had the child tested. Yes, she was deaf. And to me, to have a deaf child was no big deal. But to hearing people, if they have a deaf child, they have to go through a lot of testing and a lot of things that they have to learn about deafness. But to me, it was just nothing.
Thank you. Steffi, do you want to comment?
As I was born, my mother kept telling me, as I get older, she'd tell me stories about what it was like when I was born, taking me for hearing tests, see if I was deaf or not. And she seems to accept that I was deaf because she's deaf also. And already knew what school to put me in and she was prepared and she wasn't shocked. Like, which school would I put her in and so forth. It was really all right.
I see. Thank you. How about the opposite situation here?
Well, I'm the baby of the family. I have two older brothers who are hearing, so I guess when I was born, it was just nothing new to my parents to have a hearing child. And you'd have to ask my mom that question, what her attitude towards having a hearing child was. I think that they expected it. I don't know.
By then.
Maybe I should stand up. Whoops, sorry.
Don't worry about it.
The reason why I said I am a freak is because these people here, everyone on the panel, has had a deaf family. I came from a hearing family. And I remember very well, during my childhood years, my father was a doctor. He could give expert advice to his patients, but when it comes to his own deaf child, he was really at a loss because he had no previous experience with deafness. And he had read so many books, and he took me to so many different doctors trying to get, in quote, my hearing restored, end quote. Took me to famous hospitals, Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. I'm from Baltimore. And then one day he realized, hey, that's enough. Our child is deaf. It's about time that we accept her deafness. But I must tell you one other thing. They gave me so much love and attention. And every time when we have relatives, friends, people visiting our house, mother would come up and say, "Now, sit near me, and I will tell you what they are talking about." My mother always made me feel included. That's the most important gift that my parents gave to me.
Thank you very much. Barbara, do you want to add to that?
When I was born, my sister was already born 4 years before me. Remember that at that time it was around 1935s or so. And that day and time, experience of deafness was very negative. My relatives, hearing relatives, worried about how my parents would be able to raise a hearing child. Wanted to take my hearing sister from my parents and to raise her for the parents. My parents said no, that they would take care of her. And it was a good thing. Secondly, when I was born deaf and I was grew up, I did not know really how my parents felt about how I was born until later a deaf member of the community told me my parents were disappointed, but they had never told me that. I was surprised. It was quite a surprise. Maybe at that time, because my parents had gone through their own experience of deafness, being so negative and didn't want to have another deaf child who would have to go through that, perhaps. I don't know.
I wonder if you could say a few things about how parents, how deaf parents manage to pay proper attention to their children. For instance, how they pay attention, how they hear their children, how they notice their children, if they cry, if babies cry. Perhaps our people here are not aware of that.
When my daughter was born, Stephanie, my oldest one, my mother-in-law was very worried. She's a hearing mother-in-law. And she wanted to know how could I hear the baby cry. I said, no problem. I have a baby crier, a little device that blinks when the baby cries and makes noise. It'll blink a light. And it'll blink lights in another room. And I can see that and then come in and take care of the baby. Well, we ordered the baby crier. And it hadn't arrived. I got home from the hospital. What was I going to do? So I decided to use my hearing aid and put the baby right next to me and hope that I could hear the baby during the night.
I see. A long time ago, how did people manage with babies when they cried in the night? Lily, do you have a story about that?
I remember I was born from deaf parents, you remember that, and there was no light or flashing way back at that time. They just used, like when the baby crier, my grandmother, we used her hearing as our ears. One time my grandmother had left for a while, and so my mother put a string on my arm, tied it around my wrist, and when I started moving around, she knew that tied the string around her wrist and then tied it to herself, or would tie around my leg, and then when I started moving it would jerk the string on her, or else she would lay otherwise she'd lay next to me with her hand on the bed, and then she'd start, when I would move around, she would wake up. And now today we have modern devices so we don't have to do that.
That's lucky. Let me ask a question of Sheila, who, as you probably know if you've been here through the rest of the day, normally serves as one of our interpreters. We passed her through a telephone booth, and she came out as a participant on the other side. Sheila, could you explain a little bit about what it's like to grow up as the hearing child of deaf parents? Is there any special situations that puts you in?
I thought it was normal for me. I've never had hearing parents, so I don't know what it's like to come home from school and scream, "Hey, Mom, I'm home," or something like that. I I think that right now, as I look back, I can think it's very special. I can remember when I was growing up, I was always very proud of my parents being deaf, because that, you know, gave me another language that my friends didn't have. So I could brag about, you know, I know sign language, you know, and I'm just so good at it and all that. And my friends didn't, and so I could teach them. So I had something like, you know, over on them, that I could teach them sign language. And I think that for me, it's just, I don't know what it would be like to have hearing parents. I don't want to have hearing parents. If I did, I probably wouldn't be in the field I'm in today and doing the things I'm doing now.
Does growing up... Does growing up with deaf parents automatically make you an interpreter?
No. No. That's a misconception that a lot of people have. Having deaf parents does not mean that you are an excellent interpreter or an excellent signer or anything. I myself have developed my sign skills. It came naturally, I guess, because I've been working at it. My two brothers, who are older than I am, they can't sign. I mean, they sign, but they're really lousy. I mean, they're sloppy. They're just, and you know, we have homemade signs that, as children, we invent signs ourselves within the home. I think every home has that, and that's about all my brothers can do. And they're just like, my brother was in a car accident, and we went to the hospital, and I had to interpret what my brother was saying for my parents, because they were going, what, what? And it wasn't the drugs or anything that they were giving him in the hospital, it was just that they couldn't understand his signs. And so it doesn't automatically mean, you know, deaf parents, excellent interpreter. That's really, a lot of people think that, but it's not true.
I know. Thank you. In the opposite situation, Debbie, growing up deaf with hearing parents, do you find that your parents protected you a lot? I remember perhaps a story that you told about going to school.
Like I told you, my parents gave me so much love and attention. Sometimes I wonder if they went overboard. They really meant well, though. When I was a little girl, I went to an oral school, which was about five short blocks from my home. And I went to the school with my mother and my grandmother. Sometimes I'd get on the bus. But one day, on a bright Saturday morning, I made a formal announcement to the family that I'm going to take a walk to that school. But my family answered, "Debbie, the school is closed today. Today is Saturday." I said, "It doesn't matter. I want to take a walk alone." Alone? No, 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 you can't do that. No. You have to cross the busy streets. It's very dangerous. You can't do that. I forgot to tell you, I grew up with my mother, my father, my grandmother, my grandfather, my great aunt, my brother. They were all there, all yelling, "No, you can't do that." I stomped my foot, and I could be very stubborn when I wanted to be, like any child. So I screamed, and I carried on, and I did all those kinds of things that children do. And my father got everybody's attention, "Okay," and whispered to everybody else, "Let her go." I ran and hugged him, and I gave him a big kiss. I said, "Thank you, Daddy." I went to the closet, put on my coat, my scarves, my gloves. It was a cold day. Put my gloves on, and I went outside. And I felt so grown up. I felt so important. And I walked, and I began to notice so many things that I had never noticed before, because in the past, I was too busy looking down, holding onto my grandmother's hand. Now, I had to depend on my own self. And I looked and I watched, and I got to the first corner, and I looked both ways, no cars, and I ran across the street. Oh, I was so proud. You could have heard my buttons popping off. I was so proud of myself. And on the second block, the same thing happened. But I went across the street, but I started to feel something funny, something strange. I didn't know what it was. And I started to look around, and people started looking at me. But nobody was looking. They were all busy doing their own thing. I said, oh, I feel something funny. And I began to walk slower and slower. Felt so funny. I arrived at the third block, the corner. And I ran across, and I had that same feeling with me. And for some reason, I started to look back. And I saw my father following me in his car. You see what I mean by so much love?
I'm glad you gave us the other side of the coin there. I'd like to stop at this point and offer the audience a chance to share experiences or to ask questions of the people up here. Anything you ever wanted to know about deafness in the family? Almost anything? Question is, have any of these people had any experience with hearing ear dogs? Perhaps, first of all, one of them would like to explain what those are. Barbara.
In the last 10 years, a few deaf people have begin to have hearing ear dogs, meaning dogs who respond to door knocking, or protect the deaf person from mugging, so forth. But when we were children, most of us growing up, I doubt if we had any hearing dogs, except I did have a so-called hearing dog, but he was not trained to follow me everywhere I went, just for letting us know if somebody was knocking at the door, that's all. We'd depend on our dog's response if somebody was at the door.
Thank you very much.
I remember we had a little dog. He wasn't a watchdog. But when we moved here, we had no doorbell before they made the flashing door lights. So I didn't know what to do, so I brought my dog up to my bed when I would sleep. When somebody was ringing the doorbell, he'd jump up, and then I knew somebody was at the door. Now, of course, I don't need that dog. I've got a flasher that when someone uses a doorbell. But we used to depend on the dog for his hearing.
Thank you. Are there any other questions, particularly about family traditions? Would anyone like to add any experiences to what we've been hearing? Yeah, there's a question. Sure.
Any deaf dogs? Or do any of you have any deaf dogs?
Does it?
And why?
Yes?
I had a cat, but when you yell for a dog, oh, well, why do you use about a cat? Oh, they all had dogs. Which, yeah, the cat meows softer, and they all talk about dogs. Why not cats? You're interested in cats because they're softer? and they meow very soft.
You mean dog? You're comparing a dog with a cat? Well, people use dogs, you see, because they're a little bit more intelligent, and they respond better than cats.
Thank you. Here's a question. Okay.
I want to ask a question to Debbie Sonnenstrahl. When you were born, when you had your deaf babies, what did you do with the babies? Did you teach them? How did you teach them to develop and improve their education?
You remember, I forgot to add one more thing. Even though I came from a hearing family, I have two deaf kids myself. So that was quite a big change. When I was planning to get married, my ex-husband, my father, being the good old doctor, felt he had to do his professional duty. and he warned me. He said, your husband-to-be is a very nice man, but I'm warning you, you'll have deaf children. Like all girls in love, I told my father, oh, like Elaine said, it's no big deal. If I have deaf children, I'll know what to do. And I must admit, I had to eat my words. Now, when my boy was born, I found out that he was deaf. We had so many choices, so many options to choose from. Send him to an oral school, send him to a school that supports a sign language, mainstream program. So many of the options to choose from. It was a difficult period for us. But we agreed on one important thing. That is, teach the child the concept. Teach him all the concepts. I don't care if it's through speech, through finger spelling, through signs, but get the concepts of things across. Be exposed to all the various kinds of languages, signing, speaking, whatever. And really, my children were exposed to all kinds of communication. So, to boils down to one thing. Exposure, as much as possible, keep the communication lines open, and love. Show the child that you care, because deaf or hearing children, it's the same. They both have the same needs. Both need your attention. And so that's what we do with our deaf children. Thank you.
Barbara Canapel is one of the founders of a very important organization in Washington called Deaf Pride Incorporated. I'd like to ask her to tell you a little bit about it, because she's dealt with a lot of misconceptions that hearing parents may have about their deaf children. Perhaps you could tell us a bit about those misconceptions as well as about Deaf Pride.
I think that Deaf Pride is a unique organization because there are many different organizations that have their own groups for deaf people, organizations for parents of deaf children, another group for professional people who work with deaf people and deaf children and so forth. But there was no organization to bring all of these workers together. And I know that, 10 years ago, before we founded the Deaf Pride 10 years ago, I noticed that many deaf people did not kind of want to work with parents. And I think that deaf people are really the best resources to work with parents of deaf children. I think it's very natural, but there was none at that time. When deaf people went out in the world, they got involved with deaf clubs and so forth, their sporting events and all that sort of thing. What did the parents do with deaf children? I realized that after talking with some deaf people, many deaf people leave parents of deaf children to the professionals, let the professionals know better. But Deaf Pride wants to see deaf people and parents work together and remove the many misconceptions that parents get from some wrong kind of information. Maybe not always from professionals, but sometimes it's very limited, I should say. From the professionals, they'll explain like how to teach about speech and speaking and the hearing aids, and then that's about it. Nothing about the deaf culture and so forth. At the same time, for example, one time, one of the parents asked a deaf person, why does my child scream in the bathroom? Why? And that deaf person says, oh, that's an easy answer. That's very simple, really. Our experience in schools is that we often like to scream in a corner. It causes an echo, and it bounces in and off the walls. So perhaps that child is enjoying screaming in a closed little room like the bathroom because he can feel the echo bouncing in and off. That's probably all it is. And the parent was quite relieved because she was worried about the screaming. And if that's all, well, she can handle that. That was just one little example. Deaf Pride really encourages deaf people and parents to work together.
That would be a scary experience. Are there any other questions? Yes.
grandson is hard hearing and talking about vibrations off the wall. When he first started to school, the teachers all complained because he'd go to the bathroom and stay in so long, and when they looked in the door, he was singing for all he was worth. So evidently, it was the vibrations.
Barbara, you know, hearing people sing in the shower, too. Same reason. Sounds a lot better.
Oh, but we sing in signs. Not with our voices.
Only by people like me who are trying to learn. The question is, how far has deaf education gone in the schools? Do they have a lot of programs for deaf students? Is that it? In the very beginning of our panel, Steffi, who's in a mainstreaming situation now in junior high school, explained a little bit about that, and explained, well, perhaps you could just give a little capsule of what you said and tell us about what kinds of special services there are, just quickly again, because some new people have come in.
Okay. I go to a public school, which has a mainstream program, small auditory class for a small number of deaf children who are not going into the mainstream, but I'm in it mainstream fully. Maybe one or two classes I'll take over there in the auditory room. They do provide interpreters for us throughout the full day so they understand what's going on in class. And they teach us in the auditory class to help us and reinforce us if we don't understand what's going on in the classes, make sure that everything is going smoothly.
Thank you. Yes, Lily.
And, you know, in Washington, D.C., we have the Kendall School, the demonstration school there, KDES. And, of course, the model secondary school for the deaf is there. And in Frederick, there's the Maryland School for the Deaf, and, of course, another one at Columbia, Maryland. I think you probably could go and visit if you're interested in knowing more about deafness in the schools. You could also visit Gallaudet College. They've got a visitor center there, and there's guides that'll take you around.
That's a good point. Debbie?
There's no limit to what deaf people can do. As a matter of fact, this lady on my right is working on her PhD, and she's a deaf person herself.
That's a hard question for the panel,
well,
but we
see.
Have
first
some
thing,
teachers.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Go ahead. No. We have three teachers of sign language on this panel who will all want to answer that. Let's give them each a turn.
Shall I be first? Okay, good. I'm not a public relations person, but I will tell you about, I do teach sign language at Gallaudet College, signing, communication, sign language. They have a beginning, 1, 2, 3, 4, and so forth. I've got training all the way up through interpreters, and that's a good beginning place to start in the beginner's class in sign language. Of course, the best to learn sign language is through socializing with deaf people, of course.
Barbara.
I'm teaching beginning ASL and orientation to deafness at the University of Maryland. I've got a team teaching. Both of us teach every Tuesday night. If you are students at the University of Maryland, you could register for that course, take sign language, and maybe have some connection with that and improve your signing. If you've had no exposure to deaf people, you should take it. But it's a good experience to take sign language to get just experience, and even if you don't have any deaf friends, to practice with. It doesn't matter. I think it's wonderful that hearing people are interested, no matter, even if they don't have any deaf friends to practice with, just for the exposure of it, learning signings and having that experience.
I could perhaps ask Elaine to comment on that, and I should also mention to you that as soon as we can move the benches around in here, in about 2 or 3 minutes, Elaine Aiello is going to be teaching an introductory sign language course in this very tent. So if you stick around, you'll have a chance to find out how hard it is. Do you want to comment on how hard it is to learn sign language?
Well, some people approach, come to my class thinking they can learn sign language in maybe 10 weeks. And I'll ask you, can you learn Spanish or French, German in 10 weeks? No. Really, it takes a long time. But don't be discouraged. Work at it. Be motivated. Try to meet as many deaf people as you can. The more contacts you have with deaf people, the faster you will learn, just like any other language.
Thank you very much. Let's all thank our participants this afternoon. Our program, which will start in a couple of minutes here, will be a sign language class, an introductory sign language class. At the same time, over in our other tent, we'll be presenting a demonstration of the TTY. It's a teletypewriter that the deaf use to communicate on the telephone with one another. Over in the craft sales tent, we're selling some books on deafness, some deaf poetry, on the history of the deaf in America. And one last announcement. I've been asked to tell our deaf visitors who can be helped by it that during all of the evening concerts over on the main stage on the other side of Madison Drive, we will have an audio loop that will help those whose hearing aids can benefit from that system. The concerts are every night from 7:30 until 10. Thank you.